Building a company from nothing is freaking hard. Us entrepreneurs are expected to deal with unimaginable challenges and somehow keep a cool head through it all. This is The Art of Entrepreneurship, and I'm your host, Jackie Hermes. I grew my company, Excelity, from 0 to 7 figures with no partners and no funding. The Art of Entrepreneurship is a show where we cut through the BS and dig into what it actually takes to start and grow a company. If you give me your time, I promise it won't be wasted. Now let's get to work.
Hello and welcome back to The Art of Entrepreneurship. Today I am talking to Vicky Boudreau, who is the CEO and co-founder of Haylist, which is an influencer marketing software platform that recently did a fundraise that was oversubscribed. And we talk about how she did that in, frankly, an environment that is hard to raise in and even harder for women to raise in. Vicky and I had a fantastic conversation. If you think that I give it to you straight, she is super no BS, straightforward, and she has a lot of great stories about being a founder, being a female founder, and being a mother, how she works to, I hate this word, but balance it all, and a story about how her daughter once told her that she wishes she had a regular job and how she went about handling that. So stay tuned for this fantastic conversation, and thank you for being here, Vicky.
Okay, so let's start talking a little bit about your founder journey. I feel like that's a good place to start. What inspired you to leave what looks like a very successful PR firm and successful career there and build a tech startup like Haylist?
Yeah, so I co-founded my PR and marketing firm already 19 years ago. So right out of school, I met my co-founder. She was already running a small firm, and we decided to partner together at this point. And it was just like the two of us with the laptops, and it grew to a team of at some point 45 people with offices in Montreal, Toronto, New York, and Paris. And I was the head of business development and innovation, and always on the go to see what would be like the next play in our space and the like more exciting clients to get. And at some point, I saw that there was such a big opportunity to change the narrative around influencer marketing. We were at the forefront of it, been in that business for 15 years now, started with sponsorship of celebrities wearing T-shirt with logos, and we would like calculate the return on investment as if the brands were paying like paid advertising in magazines and all these types of charts that we were almost creating to justify the work that we were doing. And it grew to this huge industry that we know now, with influencers being their own media, launching their own products, being powerhouses. And I wanted to go back to that authenticity of someone kind of almost naively discovering a product, talking about it online, having kind of the recommendation of the peers also wading in, because whether we like it or not, we're all influencers, whether you call it creators or ambassadors or those fancy words because you're over the influencer word, everybody relies on us for some recommendations, depending on what your lifestyle is. So why don't we democratize it and have as many people participate to that growing economy?
Yeah, I'm telling you, I'm always saying I should be getting paid for all the companies that I promote, because when I love a product, I'm like, you have to buy this and you have to use this product. So we all are always promoting the products that we love, right? And then there are people that get paid for it. Can you tell me a little bit more about, I guess, the gap that you saw and that allowed you to build Haylist, which is an influencer SaaS company, right?
Yeah. So what first thing, we were doing everything manually. We tried several platforms. Some were super good for influencer search, but searching like a huge database where people don't know they're listed. So they're not most likely they don't really reply. It's like a big phone book. If someone calls you and you don't know them, you think it's spam and you don't get back to them. And some were super good at tracking. And in the middle, we were getting like tons of influencer in our inbox and emails. And when you're working on like five different brands, it gets very overwhelming. So there was an opportunity to create that one tool that would like seamlessly help brands and agency run their campaigns by themselves. And on the other side, I wanted to empower smaller creators, teach them how to create more beautiful content, how to get contracts with brands. So we build that dashboard and that community where they can learn from each other and learn from us. And because we have a partnership with both Meta and TikTok, they connect their socials. So it's not like they reply and they want to participate in campaign. They're very engaged and I love them to death. Whenever I'm super tired, I just scroll at night and go look at their feed and see the content that they create. And sometimes they have 2,000 followers, 8,000 followers, but they create the best content and their entourage like are commenting. Actually, if you don't want to smell like your best friend, so it's great that you have like a super celebrity promoting a perfume, but if you have a zit, you want to know what your friend's using. So for different types of products, you engage with smaller creator, it gives you more conversion. Yeah.
Yeah, I always click through on the ads from micro influencers to see like, who are these people that are promoting, you know, certain products? And I found so many interesting influencers in that way. So, and then would you call those people micro influencers or what exactly classifies like the different influencers?
Yeah, it's mostly the number of followers. So we say nano is 10,000 and less. And micro is everywhere between 10,000 and 50,000 followers. But it depends on the vertical. Like if you're super niche, then you might work with that one person that is specialized in, I don't know, like they're cowboys from Florida and they're vegan. And so the pool of creator really like it narrows down. So you might be likely to collaborate with them even if they don't have a big following. But it's mostly by tiers of numbers of followers.
Okay, that makes sense. So I saw that you recently closed a round, which was oversubscribed. Very exciting. Congratulations.
Tell me
the real story behind that, because I know it is hard to raise money. It's got to be hard to raise money right now. And then I know statistically, it is even harder to raise money as a woman. So
I think it's like 2% of money going to startups are going to startups founded by women. So it's very small. I have so many theories, like we could do a 2-hour show on that. And my story is very different. And I don't want to jinx for my next round because I know it's not going to be as easy. But I think that the fact that I started my second business in my early 40s, like I'm not part of the alpha tech bro era crowd, it's a different story, but I've had the chance to build my network. So I knew more people and I really wanted to learn. So at the beginning, we were bootstrapping from my first company to the second one. So I really needed money at the time. And my partner is my partner in my second business as well, even if she's not there into operation. So we were doing all of this together. So I was asking questions. And there's a say that is, ask for money, you'll get advice. Ask for advice, you'll get money. So I went out to ask advice to some VCs to know how it works. Should I be more like this when I'll be needing money in 6 months, or should I do that? And I got offered a term sheet.
Wow. I have never heard that saying before. That is fascinating. Why do you think that is?
I think that because when you look, it's a game of FOMO, and now I understand it. Like, which deal is, if you don't need investors and you're super independent, they want to bet on you because they think it's going to be successful. If you're desperate for money and you've been raising for months, and investors will think, oh, all the other investors passed on it, so it's not a good deal. So there is so much like this. At the end, they go into your data room and you need to show numbers and there needs to be like some tangible data there. But I feel that there's so much about like the hype and creating like the energy around the project and who are the founders, and the fact that me and my two other co-founders were second time founders, it's the risk. The project in terms of we're getting this $1.6 million, we're not going to go on a yacht at Cannes from day one.
Yeah, right.
We know how to make payroll and the basic stuff like operation. Yeah, and I think it's all a thing of alignment, and I'm very esoteric, and I believe like in karma and magic, and sometimes things align. But I feel like the fact that I was not shy and I went to knock on doors and ask questions, and I showed that I was coachable and I wanted to learn, was probably something that really helped.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think there's something about the power dynamic there too, right? Because when you don't need money, then you're still in power. And when you're going to ask investors for money, then they have all of the power. And
exactly.
And there's always, it's a part of business that will always exist, right? But there's always a little bit of a power dynamic in every relationship. So
and it's almost like dating, honestly. Mm-hmm. You need to keep them on their toes and being curious. And I'm discovering it now because we're going to be back at market probably late next fall, early next year. And I'm like seeing all those dynamics of they see you're talking to these people. So and I don't want to play any game. And I think that what made us successful is that I was super authentic and I was just like, I was not playing game, and maybe that helped.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, y'all, it's shameless plug time. I want to take a quick break to chat with you about Excelity, my full service marketing agency. For the last 12 years, we've been working closely with B2B software and service companies. Now we are expanding and looking for growth stage companies with a bold vision, but maybe lacking the marketing strategy or resources to get there. Or hey, you might have resources that just aren't working out. We definitely see that all the time. At Excelity, our team gets results and we have a ton of fun doing it. I'm sure you can tell that from listening to this podcast. So if you or someone you know is a fit, check us out at excelitymarketing.com or reach out to me directly on LinkedIn.
So I want to switch gears and talk about a story that I saw on your LinkedIn. You said that your daughter once wished that you had a regular job. And this is something that I'm telling you, I have heard from my kids. And kids have a different perspective, right? Like my kids will come in at night and say, "Can you tuck me in?" And then they'll say, "You're always on your computer." And it's like, well, I'm on my computer the 5 minutes that you have asked me to tuck you in, right? Like you don't see all this other time. So, you know, it's kind of all in perspective. And I saw that you said like, I'm home by 5:30 or 6 most nights. And, you know, it's kind of like as if I had a regular job, but it's also a kid's perspective. How did that impact you and kind of how you think about parenting and entrepreneurship? And tell me a little bit more about that story.
Yeah, I think it gives us so much flexibility. Let's say I need to go to the dentist appointment, or I don't need to ask anyone like to take half a day off. Or so it's kind of weird because I've been an entrepreneur for 20 years. So I've took my emails for 20 years every single day because this is how I am wired. I'm not having any fun if I don't make sure that everything is under control first. Doesn't mean I cannot take a day off or like go on vacation with my family, but it's kind of so weird because your work gets blurred into your life. Even social events become business opportunities, and it's kind of so mixed up together. And it gives access to the kids like to go to Disney premiere of movies and stuff that they would like not go typically. And I sometimes refrain myself from saying like, you wouldn't get these vacations if I was not working that hard, but I cannot go there because they don't care about whether we're going to Clumet or like Cuba on a budget. Like they just want to be with us. So I feel it's a very important shock of value for me. And it really put things into perspective. Either my own definition of success, is it like that other luxury bag that I can afford, or is it like that I can take an afternoon off with them that is more important to them? And one thing that I learned about that post that went like super intense, like 40 people chime in, like they were sharing their experience under it. Some men too, they were like, "Oh, us too, it's difficult." And I was like, "Yeah, but do you have like, do you take all the school's email?" Like
yeah,
we still have a lot
for sure.
that we do. But I think it's a super hot topic that we don't really talk about, that guilt. And I never felt guilt. I traveled much. I did a lot of stuff related to my career that I was not always home, but never felt an ounce of guilt. And now that she's 11 and she throws it my way, like super clearly, and we're the only kids at school that has a nanny picking us up. And I'm like, okay, we're in a like very family neighborhood, not super posh. So go like three weeks this way. Like there's no parents at school ever. So it's just like teaching them. But I feel the most important thing, it's forced us to review our values when you're being pointed like that by your kids.
Yeah.
Like what's important at the end of the day? And so I think it's more about being available when they feel like they need you. And I've been told by friends that when they get teenager, it's worse because they don't talk to you. And that one moment that they open, you need to be there. So I don't know how I'm going to deal with that. But we're learning as parents every single day. So I think it's part of the journey. Yeah.
That's when my 14-year-olds come in at night. If they want to talk at the most odd hours, they'll come in at like 9:45. If I'm on my computer, I'm like, okay, I will shut it down because that's when they want to tell me about their social life or whatever's going on. And it's like, whenever they want to tell you something, it's like, all right, be ready to listen because that might be the one time they want to talk to you over like a few days. So it's an interesting balance. And yes, I have been an entrepreneur the entire time really that I've been raising children. So them being able to see that flexibility, I think is huge. And I think most of them want to own businesses as well. So I think they see the benefits too.
Yeah. And I was getting this award in New York and she helped me pick my dress and it was like super flashy with the cleavage. Like I would have never worn that, but I was like, okay, I'm giving you this one. And I got a lot of comments and I told her, you know, like the dress that you picked for me, like I had a lot of people coming and she was like, okay, so you're going to this event. So you need to be noticed. Like she's kind of like strategizing my presence there. You need to be noticed, but not over the top. And so they kind of, when you involve them in what you're doing, I feel like they get excited and they're more likely to cheer you up than just if you keep them shut from what's happening in your life. They just think you're away and you're away. But
yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have one last question, which I guess is a good segue from the last one, which there's still a bit of a stigma around ambition for women. And we were chatting a little bit before we started recording about, you know, like the expectations for mothers and parents. How do you embrace that unapologetically and deal with, I guess, some of the guilt that might come along with it?
And it's super interesting because I was having a session with my coach this morning and I was like, I want to build that global multi-billion dollar company and I need to like answer the school email. And like, when I'm tired, I doubt more and I get more fearful and I know this kills my magic power of confidence. So I need to be super protective of my energy. So I think it's an everyday job to keep space for your ambition and to own it, even if it's scary, even if people try to tone you down because you're older, because you're a woman, because you're in this fluffy space. I've been like looked up by people because I was in the influencer marketing space. And now I think some of them, I don't know if they regret passing, but they see that we're building something very serious and it's getting a lot of traction. So I think it's all about like keeping space for nurturing your own confidence. And if it takes like 3 days of reformer Pilates on your schedule and 3 runs and getting your hair done because it gives you confidence and it sounds super superficial, but we all have those small things that we can allow to take care of ourselves first. I always love the idea of the put your oxygen mask first before you can help everyone. If you want to build something big, you want to have to be there for your team, your family, your spouse, your friends I haven't seen in a long time now. But you need to take care of yourself first. If I need to move around, it's moving like a client appointment. It's not skipping forever. And this is how I protect my mental health and my happiness. And this comes first. And since I understood that, I have been doing super well. And I'm in a good mood, so I don't fight with my husband.
Mm-hmm. That is, since I started doing things like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. It's hard not to all the time, but
of course.
Yeah, well, I think that is a perfect place to leave it. So I really appreciate just the transparency. That is exactly what we do here, is have just really open and honest conversations about what it is like to build companies. So thank you so much. And for everyone that is listening, if you got value out of today's episode, please share it with just one person that needs to hear this message. And I will talk to you next time. Thank you, Vicky.
Thank you so much.